I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that, they're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Episode of CM Juice Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, the best Jew in the world, CM Jew, and I welcome you to a brand new pipe bomb on wrestling's past. On this episode, it is April, and we have a lot of different choices, but for my first choice for April, you know, again, staying within pay-per-views that happened in the month of April, I go to a much-beloved classic that used to happen after WrestleMania. A big pay-per-view that would happen towards the end of April, sometimes early May, but for the most part, end of April. I am, of course, talking about Backlash. And what is a more appropriate name for a pay-per-view right after the show of shows, the showcase of the Immortals, than Backlash, you know? Hinting at all the backlash of a fallout of WrestleMania. And the backlash that we will be reviewing is one of my favorites. I'm talking about Backlash 2000. Yes, we're going back to the Attitude Era, when the Attitude Era was really kicking on all gears and, you know, had so many great elements to the WWE at the time, of course, still known as the WWF. Of course, at that WrestleMania, the four corners championship match, the first ever TLC match, among other matches that happened at that. All of these great wrestlers that we love, this was sort of their, this is the height of that period. So, Backlash 2000 will be the topic for tonight's review. Now, I made mention to how Backlash used to be the pay-per-view after WrestleMania. Again, the appropriate name, consisting of the Backlash from what would happen at that year's WrestleMania. I bring that up because let's talk about WrestleMania for a second. Because we just had WrestleMania 30 this past Sunday. Another reason I wanted to watch what I was hoping and was damn sure glad was a very good pay-per-view. Namely, to wash the bad taste of this year's WrestleMania out of my mouth. I'm actually going to leave this because I am going to be on the WrestleCast again. I actually was not there for the review. Third year in a row, folks. Something has happened to me of falling sick or a back hurting or something that sort of lessened my enjoyment at the time of the pay-per-view. You know, 3 years ago, I couldn't hear because my ears were clogged up. Drove me nuts. Last year, ears were clogged up, I was bloated, and my back hurt. I hurt my back somehow. This year, I caught a virus, and all through the pay-per-view, and after the pay-per-view, and for the past 2 days, I've been constantly going to the bathroom. How do I put this delicately? Working both ends, shall we say. I'm doing much better now. Thank God. And apparently the bug has been going around, and it's a nasty little bug, let me tell you. But, yeah, I mean, I watched most of it, and I did see most of everything, but there were times where I had to go in for 5 minutes, which is really embarrassing when you invite a bunch of people over, and they're there, and you're constantly going in and out of the bathroom. So that was fun. But, you know, I did watch it, so I'll leave the general review. There's so much to talk about this week with that happening, the untimely, unfortunate death of the Ultimate Warrior. I'm doing, by the way, this podcast on Thursday night. I just watched Eric Young become the new TNA World Heavyweight Championship, which, way to go, TNA, for actually doing something good. But again, I guess I'll talk all about that more on this week's WrestleCast, because I will be on there this Friday. That being said, there is one topic from that I do more importantly want to talk about, and that's the big 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that's that The Undertaker loss at WrestleMania. The streak is broken. He lost clean, as you can put it, and people were obviously shocked. Nobody knew it was coming. People have mentioned the poor referee who thought he created the greatest botch in WrestleMania history, in wrestling history, and cost The Undertaker the streak because he didn't even know. And I laugh at it now. But I kind of want to talk about it because there's been a lot of people, you know, obviously there's been a lot of people bitching about it, but there's also been a lot of people like, hold your horses. You know, it was The Undertaker's decision. It was Vince's decision. They have the right to this decision. So I want to clear a couple things about that before we get into the review of Backlash 2000 proper. Just to give my initial view on it. And I'll definitely get into more of this on this week's WrestleCast. And Matty J, have I pimped you enough? Not enough? Okay. I will continue to pimp you through the show. I expect that check in the mail, by the way. All joking aside, let me be serious. You know what? Vince McMahon, Undertaker, because there are varying reports now, whoever decided to have the streak broken, it was their choice. I mean, the report is now that both of them made the choice. It's their choice, and they do have the right to make the choice. I am a critic, you know, or I am more importantly, I am a reviewer, and I am a fan. Even regardless of whether I have a podcast or not, it's my right to have my view on what happened. And if I don't like it, I don't like it. And he had to, well, you can not like it all. Yeah, it happened. You know what? It happened. You're right. But there are issues surrounding it that just, no, that leave a bad taste in my mouth. And it does affect the legacy of The Undertaker. It does affect the legacy of this year's WrestleMania. The fact of the matter is, that by far was one of the worst Undertaker WrestleMania matches I have ever seen. There was no energy to it. It was just a bad match. I mean, he had a very neat entrance, but when you consider last year's Undertaker entrance, this was just, you know, I remember even watching, like, oh, it's a cool entrance, but it kind of feels fine. I mean, it's interesting, 22 gaskets. You know, I mean, when you include the build-up that, you know, made Undertaker look strong, made Lesnar look weak. But it's also the thing to where you had this match. This is supposed to be Undertaker's last match, or by him losing the streak, it's going to be considered, for the most part, his last match. And there's a lot of rumors that it is. That being said, the match where the streak is broken has to feel epic. There was nothing about this match that felt epic. The fact of the matter is, this felt like a very slow version of what would be an average match in 2004. And might I add, this isn't 2004, this is 2014. And this is also the WWE, and I'm sorry, there are some high standards to be kept there. And, well, people are going to say, well, it's The Undertaker, and he's 50 years old, and he can't wrestle like that. Well, if he can't wrestle at a high standard, you know what? He shouldn't be wrestling. I know that sounds harsh to sit there and say, but you know, this is the problem people have had with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and Sting and all of them who continue to wrestle, put themselves in these main events and wrestle bad matches, and I completely agree with them on this, is that if you can't, you know, we have a high standard, and sometimes they put on these great matches, even this old. But in this case, it was a bad match, and it did not live up to the standard of an Undertaker WrestleMania match. I mean, when the Undertaker Mark Henry casket match from WrestleMania 22 is a better WrestleMania Undertaker match than yours, you have problems. But then it, you know, it also comes back to the fact that by them doing this, they should have done it at the end of the night. Because by doing it basically in like the start of the final third of Mania, it killed all the emotion. It killed the mood of WrestleMania. The fans were just not in to the last two matches, which included the main event where Daniel Bryan, everybody's hero, finally won the title. And yes, people cheered and they were saying yes, but it wasn't as loud as it could be because the mood was killed and everybody was still in shock for the moment. I mean, there were people who left when Taker lost. It affected the mood of the main event. There should have been a lot more emotion after that win and everything. And that loss affected that badly. If Taker was going to lose, and they all knew that, it should have been the last match of the night. Plain and simple. Should have been the last match of the night. Because there's no way any match is going to survive the literal shock that came after Undertaker losing. And it was proven right there. So it was a bad match. It affected the rest of WrestleMania poorly. Hell, it affected the entire WrestleMania. Because now all people are going to be able to say about our WrestleMania 30 is not that Daniel Bryan finally won the championship. They're not going to talk about the great, you know, match of the night that was John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. They're not going to talk about the other matches that were good, like the tag team match that happened at the pre-show. They're not going to talk about hell, the great sort of opening talk between Hogan, Rock, and Stone Cold. All anybody's going to talk about is that Undertaker lost. That's all anybody is going to talk about. That's all they're going to talk about. And that is a crime. Because they should be talking about Bryan win the championship. They should be talking about the Cena-Wyatt match. They should be talking about the great four-team tag team match that happened before the Mania happened. They should talk about Cesaro winning the Battle Royal. But they're not. And it also, the final thing I'll add, and I'll probably talk about all this, again, like I said, on the WrestleCast, is the fact that it just seems as if they did not care about the streak. They handed it to Brock, and it is, because they handed it to Brock Lesnar. And it is the issue that Brock Lesnar is a part-time wrestler who does not care about the WWE. I am sorry, he doesn't. He's only there for the money. And as soon as it bores him, he's gone and out the door, and you know and I know it, yet Vince McMahon and the people in the WWE are somehow fooling themselves into believing that, oh, it's going to be different this time. As if, you know, like the last time when he left because he was interested in the National Football League and UFC, and he just decided to quit. And of course, we saw what happened when he decided to quit back at WrestleMania 20, don't we? And the fact is that, you know, instead of giving it to somebody who cares about this business and will actually do something with it, you know, it's a matter of the Undertaker just gave it to his good friend, who's Lesnar. As if the streak doesn't matter. And it felt like to them, I mean, I know it doesn't, but they made it feel like the streak doesn't matter. And it says, you know what, it's a spit in the face to CM Punk and Shawn Michaels and Triple H, who, if you're going to break the streak, it would have better to give it to them because they can actually do something with it. You know, Lesnar's not going to do anything with it. Lesnar's not going to fall to anybody. Lesnar's not going to put over any. Lesnar has never put anybody over, and when I all and everybody listening knows it. Can you really name the last time Lesnar really put anybody over? No, you can't, because he hasn't. The only character he agrees to is being a goddamn beast. And him, and making himself look great. Yeah, I have a problem with it being given to the guy who quits when he can't hack it at anything anymore. You know, when he couldn't hack it in WWE anymore, he ran to the NFL. When he couldn't hack it in the NFL, he ran to the UFC, which he succeeded for a little bit. But then when he couldn't hack it there, he went to his mountain hideaway, grew his beard, and then when he needed money, ran and begged his way back into the WWE. Yeah, I have a problem with it going to that guy. You know what Undertaker losing at WrestleMania proved? That CM Punk was right. Vince McMahon just justified CM Punk leaving. Now, I don't agree with how he left, but I hell understand it. I am pissed off, and I have a right to be pissed off and state my opinion. You may not, you know, you have a right not to like my opinion. But you know what? The way they went about doing it, and look, if the match had been epic, if it had felt epic, if there had been some grandeur to it that made me feel alive, yes, I would have been shocked, but I, you know what, I would be able to sit here and say, I don't agree with Lesnar getting it, but you know what, it felt epic, and it felt like a great finale to the streak, but it didn't. It felt like it was just put there for shock value. And for something like the streak to just be ended like that just for shock value is the wrong thing to do. Yes, they have the right to decide to do that. But you know what? What they did, but there are consequences to that. We are, fans are the ones who will ultimately judge how we look upon that. And we have the right to, and really should be, honest with our opinion. And our opinion is, it sucks. Because of how it was all handled, it's everything that surrounds it. It's not just one thing. So, you know what? The fans have a justifiable right to be pissed. You know what? No one's ever said that they didn't have the right to do it. There are a few people, obviously, who probably did. But any reasonable fan is not sitting here saying they don't have a right to do it. We're just saying it was the wrong thing to do. And why we can't all agree on that. And agree that this may be one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. It's a perfect example how one bad match or one bad booking, you know, when it's especially egregious, can actually hurt a pay-per-view. It's a perfect example of that. I just want to get off the chest. I'm going to more than likely talk about it again. Like I said on the WrestleCast, I'm going to be on this Friday. A lot of that being the fact that I wanted to be there Sunday night. Obviously, being sick, I couldn't. And I felt horrible that I couldn't be there, considering some of the things that happened. So, with that being said, wow. I didn't expect to go that long, but, you know, I just had all this backlash of emotions. That I wanted to get off my chest, about Undertaker losing, at the very least that. But speaking of a backlash of emotions, let's get to our review of Backlash 2000. Now, of course, this means it's time to go over our little things here. Backlash 2000, was at the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., with an attendance of 17,867. It featured 9 matches, 12 if you include the 3 Sunday night Heat matches, which I didn't get to see, but I'll get over them real quick in just a second. Of course, your commentators were good old JR and Jerry the Puppy Master King Lawler. and went for a time of 2 hours and 48 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Backlash 2000.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
Sunday night matches, which I did not get to see. They were not part of the pay-per-view. Obviously, the network does not have the Sunday night matches or any of them on the network yet, so obviously I couldn't go back and see them, which is a damn shame, because I like a lot of the wrestlers that were in there, and it would have been great to see it. The first match was D'Lo Brown versus Al Snow, which D'Lo Brown won by disqualification. That would have been really fun to see. You then had Steve Blackman versus Val Venus, in which Steve Blackman won. And then, of course, the main event of Sunday Night Heat was The Godfather and Kentai, which is the team of Taka, Michinoku, and Funaki, versus Steven Richards and the Headbangers of Mosh and Thrash. With The Godfather and Kentai winning in a 6-man tag team match. It would have been fun to watch them. All these matches, from the way they look, were great build-ups for the pay-per-view. Sunday Night Heat was always fun on the night of the pay-per-view, because you had these great matches that would give you the sense of the pay-per-view. But with that being said, let's get into our first match. Our first match features the Generation X, of the team of X-Pac and Road Dogg, because, oh, you didn't know, your ass better call somebody, with the lovable Tori versus the WWF Tag Team Champions of the World, Edge and Christian, in a tag team match for the WWF Tag Team Championship. I might add is that the special guest ring announcer for this match was the returning Deborah, who had her puppies in lovely full glory. And the king was very happy to see the puppies that were back. but she can't ring announce for... She couldn't save her life the ring announcing. Emotion, girl! Emotion! There's a reason we leave this to Lillian Garcia. But you know what? Damn good opening match. I really enjoyed this match. A great back-and-forth tag team battle. You know, when you think of the term X-Pac Heat, this is what we talk about. Because they were just laid into X-Pac. But it was just a great back-and-forth tag team match. A lot of great tag team maneuvers, and not just like double suplexes and that stuff, but also just tag team wrestling terminology, ring psychology, something that we'd see throughout this night through the several tag team matches we would have, is, the face tag team was about to make a tag, and so the heel tag team will, get the ref's attention and draw him away from seeing the tag, so when the tag is made and the fresh face comes in, he doesn't see the tag and forces him out. We actually see that happen in all three of the tag team matches that happen over this evening. And I just love the continuity there. And they did a great job by JR to bring it up throughout the evening. You know, throughout the evening, like, that's the third time we've seen that happen in a tag team match. You'd think the refs would learn by now. And I love that continuity by that. But great match, and I love the ending. You know, Christian, you know, using the ring bell, smashing it over Xbox's head. The Crimson Max on Xbox afterwards. You know, as Michael Cole would say, vintage Edging Christian, vintage Edging Christian for the victory. But, you know, just a great opening match, great way to use these two tag teams to sort of really build on that tag team division that was just the best of the world at this point in time. You then have our second match of the evening and second title match for the evening. You have Scotty to Hottie versus the WWF Light Heavyweight Champion, Dean Malenko, for the WWF Light Heavyweight Championship. This was a damn good light heavyweight slash cruiserweight match, whichever you want to use. Of course, WWF wouldn't use cruiserweight until a couple years later. But this was a damn good light heavyweight match. Great back and forth. Anytime I get to watch Dean Malenko work, it is a joy because he is a master in that ring, and I love watching him in these light heavyweight bouts as a, you know, just great mat ring tactician, and yes, he's a great ring general, great mat tactician, and, you know, great submissive wrestler as well. And I thought Scotty Too Hotty created a great sort of contrast of styles to that through his style of his light heavyweight style, the way he moved, the way he does his maneuvers. Great back and forth battle. Like, went on for, it was a good 12, it was a 13 minute match, which actually, it's the third longest match of the night, which is very surprising. But it was just a great back and forth contest. And the ending spot was just spectacular. The Scotty Too Hotty goes for a superplex, which Dean Malenko earlier had done a superplex from the top rope on him. So he tries to return the favor, but Dean Malenko counters it in midair and turns it into a DDT from the top rope for the win. Which, by the way, it's quick because so many people know Dean Malenko for the Texas Cloverleaf, which he's so damn good at doing. And it just created this great idea of really who Dean Malenko is. He isn't just this guy who has the Texas Cloverleaf. He's a mat tactician, he's a thinker, and, you know, he uses counters to win. And it was a great example of that. And just a wicked DDT from the top rope. It was just an awesome spot. Great match. I really have difficulty saying which are the best matches of the night, because I think to the different person, different matches are going to be the best match of the night in their mind. So I think in this case, I'm just going to say what are my, you know, which ones are my absolute favorites are going to be my best. This would probably be my, it's so hard to pick. Fourth favorite match of the night. It is. Fourth favorite match of the night. Really good match. So then we have our third match of the night. Not for any championship. It's three matches that, you know, we have six title matches, and so we have three matches that are not for titles. Two of them being tag team matches. And this first one is a tag team match featuring the Big Boss Man and Bull Buchanan versus the team of the Acolytes of Farouk and Bradshaw. By the way, it's funny to see Bull Buchanan here. Of course, he'd later become B2, John Cena's enforcer. He'd also be part of Right to Censor. The Acolytes, who, again, at this time, had the APA just starting. And my God, when I heard that music, like dun 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 dun, I'm like, oh yes, oh, this is gonna be a slobber knocker. There's gonna be no mat skills, no technical feats here. This is just a goddamn bar fighting. Yes, it was. This was just a good, like, four big men just trying to clock the shit out of each other, and I enjoyed it. It was a good back and forth of the battle. Again, that whole continuity of, you know, Farouk is trying to tag Bradshaw, makes a tag, but the referee doesn't see it, and pushes Bradshaw back in. I love that continuity. And then the ending, classic sort of boss man finish, hitting with the nightstick, which leads to a top rope scissor kick from Bull Buchanan, which was very impressive for them to pick up the win. Just a whole round solid match. It was sort of a great cool down match, because you had these two title matches and you needed a match in there sort of cool the crowd down and yet keep the excitement up. And it did that perfectly, especially considering what the next match was going to be. Our next match of the night is a six-man hardcore match for the WWF Hardcore Championship, where the champion, Crash Holly, faces Matt Hardy. Crash Holly faces Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, Hardcore Holly, and Perry Saturn, and the Human Suplex Machine, Taz. And the way this six-man hardcore match went is that it was one fall to a finish. And the match would end when somebody either pinned Crash Holly or Crash Holly pinned someone else. So if Taz tried to pin Perry Saturn, there may have been a count, but it wouldn't. The match wouldn't have ended. Taz couldn't pin Perry Saturn for the title. They had to pin Crash Holly. This is why we love the hardcore title. I'd like to amend something. I said that Dean Malenko, Scotty Too Hotty was my fourth favorite. No, I'm going to leave it. It is my fourth favorite. This is my fifth favorite. But they're all so close. Some more than other. At least 4 and 5 and 3 are really close, which I'll get to. 2 and my, what I feel is the second and best are a little bit more away. But they're still pretty close. This entire pay-per-view was great, if you already can't tell. But my God, the spots in this match. Oh my God, I miss hardcore wrestling. You know what? With all due respect to ECW, and ECW did it like no one else, but there was a special brand to WWE's hardcore matches. And this was its heyday, and my God, my God, my God, my God. I love this match. This was so fun. I mean, the part of this storyline was, how does Crash Holly keep winning? Which, by the way, Crash Holly ends up winning. And the spot of the finish is, they've all clocked the hell out of each other. And I can't remember if it's Taz or Perry Saturn that he pins, but one just gets clobbered by a stop sign. And then they take all of them out with, I can't remember, like I said, if it's Perry Saturn or Taz that's left lying in the middle ring. And like, Crash Holly, somehow still alive, like, drapes an arm over him and picks up the 3 count and somehow escapes alive. It's amazing. But the spots in this match were just so much fun. Oh my, you know, it's Team Extreme at their heyday. It's Taz and the suplexes by Perry Saturn did a great job. I mean, Hardcore Holly hits like nobody else. Oh, it was just so much fun to watch this match. Again, I like the storytelling here of, how the hell does Crash Holly keep winning? and of course, JR and Jerry the King Lawler were just golden doing the commentary for this match. It was just, oh God, it was fun to listen to. especially the part where, like, Jr.'s like, "Yo, Crass, just give him the title. If it means that much to him, just give it to him." You also got to remember, the reason this was the heyday was this was during the time of the 24/7 rule. Which, for those who don't know, the way the hardcore title at that point in time, and I believe it was started by Crash, was that it was a 24/7 title. It could be defended 24/7 anywhere. All you had to do was have a referee. And they would do these vignettes where you would have Crash Holly in a department store, and some wrestler would bring a referee, and he would clock him over the head, bit of 1-2-3, and yet he would then stumble, or something would happen, or Crash would jump him back and get the title back, and then escape. And they were just a joy to watch. I missed the hardcore title. Oh, and speaking of fun, we have our next match is another cooldown match, 2-away. It's a cooldown match. It's the final cooldown for the building, because the final four matches, we are one, two, three, four. This is going to be the fifth match. The final four matches that we'll get into will just continuously build off each other to the climax of this event. But the match we're going to go over, it's the final cooldown for that. It's just a fun match as well. And the match is The Big Show versus Kurt Angle. Now, a little storytelling is needed before we get into it. At this time, Big Show had taken on this "I'm gonna have fun" personality, and he would imitate, he imitated Val Venus, he imitated a Scotsman, among other people at this time. Meanwhile, Kurt Angle, who was, forming an alliance with the McMahon-Helmsley coalition, had been, rewarded a title shot for the tag team titles, and he was chosen for it. His partner was The Big Show. But The Big Show just wanted to have fun, which irritated Kurt Angle to the point that in the match he slaps The Big Show, which enrages him, which causes The Big Show to choke slam him, and they lose the match, starting the feud. So this was just a fun match. I mean, again, Kurt, just the entrances. Because first you have Kurt Angle, who comes out, and this is the time where Kurt Angle's music, and then he has a mic, and he talks about his three eyes, and, like, it's true and true, and, oh my god, this vintage Kurt Angle, as Michael Cole would put. But just, oh my god, Kurt Angle and his mic skills were just, I can't believe I didn't value them when I did, when I could have, because they, looking back, they're golden. And this is just the golden of, like, how great Kurt Angle was at getting the people to hate him. Talking about how the problem is America doesn't have, because America lies too much, and you don't have any truthful, comparing yourself to America, like, I'm like George Washington, I have to tell the truth, and Big Show is a colossal waste of talent. I'm like Abraham Lincoln, I'm just too honest, and I'm too honest that I believe that Big Show is a complete disappointment. And I'm like Mary Berry, which, by the way, for those who don't know, you young people, Miriam Berry is a former mayor of Washington, D.C., who got caught in a police sting doing crack and trying to solicit a hooker. And yet, at the election after that, he still got reelected. He's our version of Rob Ford back in the day. I mean, everybody's all up in arms about Rob Ford. I'm like, what are we talking? Why are we laughing at Rob? I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy laughing at Rob Ford, but let's not act like we haven't had the same thing. I mean, we had Marion Barry. We had our own versions of Rob Ford, okay? but I love Chris, like, I'm like Marion Barry. Actually, I'm nothing like Marion Barry, and you guys should be ashamed of yourself for electing him to a second term. It was like, oh my god. I laughed my ass off. Yes, by the way, I've memorized this speech. And it says, let's face it, we all too many Americans are liars and cheats. Just take our president. I'm like, ooh, that's a low blow. Which is why I'm your only American hero left. and blah, blah, blah. And so he gets in the ring, gets on mic, and he's waiting for the Big Show, and all of a sudden, Real American hits. And out comes the Big Show dressed as Hulk Hogan, except he's the Showster. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot he did this. Oh my God, I'm laughing my ass off, folks. I'm almost laughing my ass off thinking about it. Comes the over, he does the shirt rip. My God, and then he imitates Hogan on the mic. Let me tell you something, brother. And does a damn good job at imitating Hogan. I mean, he says brother like 4, 5, possibly 6 times. You know, he did that the flex. He's like, oh my God, I've not seen that. I've really not seen anybody do that good of an impression on Hulk Hogan. I mean, hell, the guy who from Mad TV who did it a couple years ago didn't do that good a job. I mean, oh my God, here's the flexing. He's having fun. I mean, and they start the match, and Big Show battles Kurt. By the way, the match is about 2 minutes and 35 seconds long. Bashing around, gives him the big foot, actually hits the immortal leg drop on him. Gets a 2 count, though. But then Kurt Angle, you know, is able to get up on the Big Show. But then he makes the Big Show angry. Big Show's done playing. Big Show knocks Kurt Angle out and then delivers the choke slam for the win. It was just a fun damn match. And a great cool down match. I mean, we all laughed, we all had fun, and it set us up for the final 4 matches in the finale of this pay-per-view. I love this match. To an extent, this is the worst match of the night by goddamn default. Just because of how short it is. That being said, let's get on to our next contest. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. Presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
To record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
twotruefreaks.com. Hey Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Yeah, play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Intense out. Freak!
Two!
Belong in the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it! Ow!
Go away, Baden!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Yeah, goddamn lucky he didn't kill all of them.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on, let's go.
God, she likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I said shut up! It's a man-house!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
It is a tag team match, and it features the tag teams of TNA, which is Test and Albert, with Trish Stratus versus the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and D-Von. Now, the storyline behind this is that, you know, Bubba Ray at this point in time, big thing was he loved to powerbomb women through tables. He powerbombed Mae Young, he powerbombed Lita, among others. And so, all of a sudden out of nowhere, Trish Stratus decides to tease Bubba Ray. You know, she kisses him to get away, and then starts teasing him. She starts doing these vignettes, and my God, these because they showed the vignettes, and all I could think of, like, oh my God. Because the vignettes are Trish Stratus in these, oh my God, drop dead gorgeous sexy lingerie on tables, teasing Bubba. She's in white stockings and teddies. I'm like, oh my god. I remember when WWE actually allowed voluptuous women to be in their company? Because this is, it's reminding me. Yeah, WWE actually used to allow women above a B cup to be in their goddamn company. Oh my god. By the way, I watched this match twice. Not for that, because the match, which I'll get to, is oh my god. But as we watched it in school, and the match came up, and like, I'm at a table with a bunch of geeks, and everybody stopped and starts watching these vignettes. It was hilarious. But these awesome vignettes, and just the story of, you know, your Michael Cole interviews, and TNA, and Trish Stratus. Trish Stratus, oh my god, Trish Stratus at her best. Oh my god. And then, of course, it cuts to Bubba Ray, who's like, watching the screen and watching the interview, and D-Von comes like, come on, Bubba, time to go. Oh, man. And Bubba starts reaching out, and it's like, come on. We have to testify. It vintage Dudley Boys. So we get to the match. Oh my god, great back and forth match. Great tag team battle. Dudley Boys do what they do best. The greatest tag team ever. TNA were a great tag team at that time, and just raw power was their style, and it was great to watch. And just the storytelling of the match. I'm like, they single out D-Von, they keep him away, they do all the great tag team terminology you need to, including, as I said before, the face making the tag, but the ref not seeing it, and forcing Bubba back into the corner. Again, great continuity, picking it up. King was classic here on commentary. JR was classic. And just, you know, Bubba, you didn't need a mic to pick up what he was saying, because you could hear him through the arena. There's a great part where he goes across the ring, gets on the top rope, leans over while he's still in the corner, looks at Trisha and goes, I'm gonna get you, bitch! it's like, oh my god. Oh, I miss this era of WWE so much. And great finish to the match, to where, you know, Bubba's going on, and they have it, and they're setting up for the 3D, and Trish, you know, they're about to hit it. Trish Stratus pops up on the ring, throws her coat off, and starts sort of wiggling around seductively. Distracts Bubba, test throws D-Von out the ropes, and then hits Bubba with the big boot, picks up the win. But that's not the end of the match. Oh, no. Bubba and D-Von are able to get theirs on Albert and Tess. Bubba hits the net breaker on Tess, throws him out. Then D-Von and Bubba hit the 3D on Albert, throw him out of the ring, and they're left with Trish. Bubba gets Trish, and then he tells D-Von to get the table. D-Von gets the table, and he's setting up, and all of a sudden Trish Stratus puts a lip lock on Bubba, and when she's done, he, like, momentarily, and I love this storytelling element here, he momentarily lets go, and she starts walking like, yeah, I fooled him. Nope. Bubba grabs her hair, pulls her, gets on the top rope. D-Von puts Trish on Bubba's shoulder, powerbomb to Trish Stratus through the table, and the orgasmic look, and they said, oh my god, they called it an orgasmic look, by the way, but yes, the orgasmic look of Bubba, because Bubba got wood. Oh my god, this is the second best match of the night. I love this match from start to finish. Oh my god, I love this match. And from there, we go to another great match. You have Eddie Guerrero, the WWF European champion, versus, with China in his corner, versus S.A. Rios with Lita. just recently Hall of Famed Lita, or at least this time she wasn't Hall of Fame yet then, in S.A. Rios' corner. Of course, the whole several storylines. One, Chyna helping Eddie Guerrero win the European title because she's attracted to his Latino hit. Helping Eddie get his GED. And so now they've decided tonight, or at least the day of Backlash, that they're going to have a prom and go dancing and celebrate Eddie getting his GED. Meanwhile, in the matches leading up to Backlash, they had been teaming up with S.A. Rios, and Lita kept misfiring and hitting Eddie, and then gaining the wrath of Chyna, which led to this Ultimate European title match. Now, mind you, this match starts with, again, they had taken Trish Stratus out on the stretcher, so you watch this thing, and they finally put her in an ambulance, and as the ambulance pulls away, this beautiful 59 Chevy rolls in, and it's Eddie Guerrero and Chyna, and they just got back from their prom, and the referee tells them, like, your match is next, and if you don't get there, you're going to forfeit the European title. So he basically drives the Chevy into the, vintage Eddie Guerrero, what else, into the arena, pops it open, gets out, Chyna. Now, I'll be honest, I did not see Chyna as sexy when she was with Triple H, but seeing her now, my God, she was gorgeous. And I understand why people see her sexy. She may not have the greatest, most sexy face in the world, but she's got a great body. And she looked gorgeous in that red dress. They get out, and he pops up the trunk, and basically he wrestles in tuxedo pants. He still has his bow tie on, and he just puts on, like, arm pads. And of course, S.A. Rios is in a black tight suit and black sort of pant tights. And you know what? And the match goes. It's a great back and forth match. A lot of great spots. Chyna, like, knocking Lita around. Great spot. Just great back and forth. Great maneuvers by both wrestlers. The finish was great. It was an airplane spin into a net breaker by Eddie Guerrero to defeat S.A. Rios. But they pick up the win. They dance. But then the end of the match, S.A. Rios knocks Eddie Guerrero down, or knocks Eddie Guerrero into Chyna, knocking them both down, and then Lita gets back in the ring and basically tears Chyna's evening gown off, putting her in nothing but bra and panties. And I'm like, oh dear God, I understand. I now completely understand how people can see Chyna as sexy now. Like, God damn, she's gorgeous. She is not all muscle. There's a woman. I will no longer sit there and say that is a man, because that is a woman. But it was a great match all around. And again, the storytelling was terrific. Then you get to the eighth match. Our next match is Chris Jericho versus the WWF Intercontinental Champion Chris Benoit for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. Oh my God, I love this match. It's Chris Jericho versus Chris Benoit. It is an instant classic. These are two of the best wrestlers at this particular time. We're two of the best wrestlers in the world, period. And they put on a stellar back and forth match. And oh my God, it was great. Jericho was awesome. Jericho was Jericho. Benoit was Benoit. Great back and forth. And the ending to where, Benoit brings the title in and tries to clock Jericho. Misses, and the title's on the ground. And he goes for his flying headbutt. And Jericho then pulls the title and puts it up. So Benoit hits his head on the title. But it ends up costing him disqualification. I'm like, oh my God. The ending spot was great. The match was... This was my... What I feel is the best match of the night. Bar none. This was the best match of the night. Just back and forth. This was a great wrestling match. the German suplexes, the submission holds, and the counters. And oh my god, it's these two wrestlers at their best. I know I kind of talked more about the past two matches, but that was a whole lot more due to the fact of the storyline. With these two wrestlers, you didn't need that type of storyline. Because it was all about trying to be the better wrestler. And, you know, you don't always need funny storylines with wrestlers to make them work. Different wrestlers work with different things. These aren't wrestlers that work with funny storylines. These are wrestlers that work best when it's about wanting to be the best in the world, period. And my god, this was the best match of the night. Oh my god, the counter wrestling, the maneuvers, and everything about this match was a classic and wonderful. And damn, there are a lot of matches you should watch this pay-per-view for, but this should be the number one match you watch Backlash 2004. So match of the night, just an absolutely great match. Great finish to the match. Continuing their rivalry. That brings us to our main event for the evening. Our main event is The Rock facing the WWF champion Triple H, with Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon Helmsley in his corner, with Shane McMahon as a special guest referee. Of course, the caveat here in the story is that Linda McMahon has felt that, The Rock needs somebody in his corner, and has decided to put Stone Cold Steve Austin, who Stone Cold Steve Austin had been out for a couple of months. He'd been out for injury, but in the storyline, and wherein I believe it was the beginning of, it was in November at the Survivor Series, Stone Cold had been ran over by a car. Of course, this would later be revealed way farther down the line to be Rikishi. But he had been run over by a car, so he'd been injured and been out of action. And so The Rock had became the main face and been feuding with Triple H over the past, 6 months. And this is the combination. And so Austin was returning to WWE, and he actually returned to SmackDown before. It's that classic episode of SmackDown where they're looking for Austin, and there's a cardboard cutout that they mistake. They think that Austin's in a room. Shane jumps in. It's nothing but cans. They go into another room, and it's nothing but a boombox. They go to rest in their office. There's a rattlesnake in the office, and they all have to clear out. In all the ring, they all call out Austin. Austin appears, and there's Austin with Austin Deconstruction Crane. And it's the episode where he blows up the DX bus, which is an awesome SmackDown episode, and I can't wait till they hopefully put that on the network. So this match happened. My God, it's a great match, and everything's building. Everybody knows Austin is coming, and the thing about it is that Austin hadn't arrived at the building yet, and it gets revealed. Basically, McMahon not so subtly says, basically they tampered with Austin's, travel arrangements, and I guess they say made him miss a flight, so Austin could not be there. Before The Rock comes out. When, Triple H and McMahon and all of them come out, Vince McMahon holds up his the program for Backlash and says, you might want to notice on the front, in the inside cover of your program, it says, card subject to change. Just teasing that Austin wasn't there. And, it was a great match. Rock and Triple H were great. The storytelling was wonderful. Shane McMahon was a great heel referee, as he always was. I mean, everybody played their part great. Rock, just hanged in there. And then, of course, that great spot to where, they clear off the table and Rock kicks Triple H and is set up for a Rock right on the table. Shane gets up, tries to stop him. Rock punches him, put him underneath a double Rock Bottom to Triple H and Shane through the table. Oh my god, what a spot. And the storytelling, Vince calls Pat Patterson and Briscoe down in referee shirts. They're hitting the Rock with chairs. you know, everybody thinks, oh my God, The Rock's about to lose. When all of a sudden, glass breaks, here comes Austin. Austin comes in the ring, raises hell, clears the ring, hits everybody with a chair, performs a stunner, I think to Triple H, gets down, everybody's cleared. Here comes Linda McMahon with Earl Hebner, who had been like fired about a month ago by Triple H and Stephanie and Vince. In fact, there was even a sign that said reinstate Hebner, which I found interesting, which I finally saw like before it happened. And they're just standing there, and Triple H picks up a chair, and he goes to hit Rock with it. Rock hits the spine buster and then hits the people's elbow. Linda sends Earl Hebner in there, and he counts 1, 2, 3, Rock is champion. It was just a great match. The ending was great. The match just kept building to Austin coming out, which everybody knew was going to happen. And when it happened, it was at the perfect moment for the match. And it made the match work, and it was a great back. I mean, the fact is, Triple H and Rock wrestled a wonderful match in that match. And they did a great job of building to Austin coming. And, you know, then you had the finish was great. And then, of course, Austin comes out. Where did Austin go? Austin comes out, and he comes out with a Steve Austin truck with, of course, the skull logo on the hood, and he's towing the burnt remains of the DX bus, which is awesome. And then he gets in the ring, and he shares a beer with Rock. It was a great ending to the night. This is my third favorite, and what I felt was the third best match of the night. It's just great storytelling throughout. I just love the Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, and the TNA Dudley match better. But third best match tonight, it was a great match. It's, you know, there really was not a bad match at all. Every match worked solidly. Every match did its job. This was just a great pay-per-view from start to finish. The emotion, the mood was just built upon and carried throughout the pay-per-view. It's one of the best pay-per-views I've ever seen. And I didn't get to watch this pay-per-view. I remember hearing all about it and hearing all the things that happened. I may have watched it fuzzy, you know, porn style. When I say porn style, you remember, for those of us who used to have antenna TV and old cable back in the day, you know, when you're young and you knew what channel the naughty channels on, it'd be fuzzy unless you ordered it. So, you know, when you're young, what do? When you don't want to be caught watching porn, you watch the fuzz and try to make out images of naked people. That's what we did back in the day. I faintly remember trying to do the same thing to this pay-per-view. It may have been another pay-per-view. But, you know, from start to finish, this was just a 5-star pay-per-view. It was excellent, it was wonderful, and I loved it. So, final review for Backlash 2000 is that Backlash 2000 gets a 5 out of 5 from me. I think Backlash 2000 is a must-watch. It's one of the best pay-per-views you will watch. So, that is it for CMJew's Wrestling Reviews. If you have any comments about anything I said, anything you think I should have talked more about or anything, any comments for what next week's review is going to be. Remember, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact the show at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page that you can find by going to www.facebook.com/absolutionnetwork. www.facebook.com/absolutionnetwork. Or go to www.facebook.com and search for the Absolution Network page. Like us, leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the post itself, at the site itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. You can, of course, always make sure to also check out all the other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum and Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network, the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris that you can find at www.shaftplus.com. My Tokyo SOS Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcast, a network that you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, where you can find CM Jew's Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs, the only podcast dedicated to reviewing every episode of the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series. So, also, while you're at the site, if you are at the site, remember to check out all our friends on the side part of the site that, of course, include Michael Bailey's Views from the Malone Box, Matty J's The WrestleCast, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers Podcast, and, of course, Scott Gunner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network. So check them all out, among others, on that sidebar. So that is it for this episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. Remember, if you want to send any comments about what you think of our next review, well, here's your chance to learn. Because next week, we go to the extreme. That's right. We go to ECW. And we don't just go to any ECW pay-per-view. We go to the very first ECW pay-per-view. That's right. We are going back to 1997. As we cover ECW's Barely Legal. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
Every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, nobody without too negative a deep. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said that I believe. I stand on two feet, one knee, brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind.
My love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now.
Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life but you're dreaming.